ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. I'm your host today, Christina, and I am joined with my co-host, Lisa, and a very special guest that I'll get to in a minute. Before I get to that, just a reminder to check us out on all your socials, YouTube, and wherever you get your awesome podcasts. So we are joined today by the Irish Beer Writer of the Year, John Duffy.
Oh, and he's got his framed award, folks at home. It's wonderful.
It hasn't been out of my reach since the 13th of October. But it's the nomination that counts, obviously.
Oh, it's brilliant.
No, that's so, we're so excited to have you. And again, congratulations on that. So well deserved. Very, very well deserved. So really excited to talk to you all about beer blogging and Bjorn and just everything. But before that, let's start with that, you know, perennial question. What are you drinking? So John, I'm going to start with you. What are you drinking today?
Well, I am a stout man. So I am on Porterhouse's Rasslers, as I think it's still sort of semi-officially called, but they changed the name to XXXX a couple of years ago because some branding consultant presumably told them that was a good idea. Everyone still calls it Rasslers. It's been a favorite of mine for a very long time. It's still great. It works equally well on nitro, on cask, on bottled and canned. Lovely, big, hoppy, but still sessionable stout.
Very good. That's a good one. It's a very nice beer. Lisa, what are you drinking?
I am on the Dead Center Brewing Source Code, which is a triple dry hopped IPA, not triple hopped, because that doesn't mean anything. Triple dry hopped, at least. But we'll say that means something. Sure, let's go for it. And we like our friends at Dead Center. So we will see how this one goes. We always, again, like to support Irish beer. And that's kind of part of tonight's discussion. So excited about that. And how about yourself?
Well, I can't drink for a while. Stupid health problems. But I have the Trouble Pumpkin Brew Pumpkin Ale. So I'm hoping I can drink some of these for Christmas because this is like one of my favorite beers of all time. So I got some at Martin's and I'm just, you know, hoarding them away for Christmas holidays, which hopefully then I can drink again. But yeah, really excited to try this one. I love this beer. I love the whole kind of exciting time of the year to kind of get it. Like we were talking before about things that are kind of limited edition, and I do like that. So I love this beer and I'm just so excited for it.
Yeah, really, this excited. Is really good. I liked it.
Drinking Halloween beer at Christmas is very on brand for Christina. Yeah.
True.
I still have my Halloween decorations up, so
we're trying to take ours down now, but it's still it's a slow process. We're spooky people, so.
Exactly. I mean, is it a Halloween decoration or is it just decor?
Exactly. But we digress.
Yes. First, let's get to the interview. So John, if you want to tell us a little bit about how you got, like, why craft beer? What was the beginning of all of that?
Yeah, well, it wasn't called craft beer back then. I I came to Dublin in 1995 to go to college. And summer of 1996 was between first and second year in college. And I decided I would stay in Dublin and got a job in a pub and was the absolute worst barman in the world. hated it, really bad at it. But one of the things was that one of the pub was owned by three brothers, and one of them was always checking out whenever a new place opened, a new restaurant, a new bar. He would be among the first to go along, and he would report back. And I remember one must have been a Friday evening, and I was sweeping up at, you know, whatever it was, 12 o'clock, 1 a.m. And he stuck his head under the shutters and came in and plonked himself down at a bar stool and said, there's this new place that's just opened in Temple Bar and they're making their own beer. And everyone who was standing around had a good laugh at that. And it had never occurred to me that you could go to a place where beer was made. I mean, beer came on the back of a truck. That's what it was. So the idea of being able to go to the place where the beer is made and drink the beer there was just incredible to me. So first chance I got, I went down to this new place, which was the Porterhouse on Parliament Street in Dublin. So back then, the brewery was inside the pub itself. They've since moved it out. But you could go in and they had brewers in white coats, you know, going up and down the sort of glass-fronted brewery. And they had their own range of beers, none of the familiar brands at all. And I got really into it. It was the time when a nitrogenated red ale was just new. So Caffrey's and Kilkenny were big, and Porterhouse had their own, their Porterhouse Red. And I became a big fan of that. And I dragged everyone I knew to drink in the Porterhouse as soon as I could. And I think that's kind of where when I started getting fascinated in beer, and sort of that my mind was open to there is more than just the mainstream brands. And then a few years later, I started to travel, and that always became sort of the first thing that I did when I went somewhere was find out, well, what's the local beer? Where can I go to drink beer where it's made? And everything else just kind of followed from there. I thought I would have got over it by now, but it's a quarter of a century later, we're still here.
I wonder too, I feel like maybe people either start homebrewing and then end up opening a brewery, or they start writing and go down that route. So you've clearly chosen the more economically sensible option in writing. But when did you first start the writing bit? Did you start off just doing kind of tasting notes? How did it evolve into a more public?
So, well, you can, all of my juvenilia is still there on my blog. I started traveling and started getting interested in beer, and it must have been 2004. I was in London. And I walked into a pub and there were whatever, 7 or 8 different beers on, and there was Green King IPA and there was London Pride and there was lots of the familiar brands from English beer at that time. And I thought, I've definitely had some of these before and I don't think all of them are good. I need a way of remembering or having a reference point for which beers I like and which beers I don't. So I need to start keeping a list, basically. And it was, I sort of had that idea in my head for probably the guts of a year. And then I was going to Birmingham, I think, in 2005. And I thought, right, I definitely have to start getting stuff written down. And Neil Gaiman had a blog. I thought, well, the way to do this is, rather than as a notebook, is to make a blog out of it. So 2005, April 2005, I started a blog called The Beer Nut, because all of the good names were taken. That was the last one left. And the idea was just to keep a record of every beer I've had and whether it was any good or not. And then I got sort of bored doing it like that, so I've started writing in a way that entertained me, and it's kind of grown from there. Nearly 18 years later, I'm now posting about 3 times a week on whatever comes my way. It's very sustainable because I don't have to think of topics. I don't have to go on it. Right. I admire the people like yourself who have a general interest beer content because I know how tricky it must be to try to come up with, you know, a schedule of things to discourse upon. I just go to the off license or go to the pub, drink what's there, write down what it tastes like and publish it on the blog. And that's pretty much it. But I find that once you start that process of thinking about it and writing about it, it does completely change your attitude. So beer just completely took over my spare time. And it's mostly what I think about now. And and then sort of Twitter came along and magnified everything. So yeah, beer's now my life.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? You're going to go somewhere, but before you even look up, like, what are the fun restaurants? What are the sites? You're like, okay, wait, where do I go to get the good local beer? And now I feel like it's so complicated too, because it's not just where's the good local beer, but it's like, did anyone do a bad thing at any of these other breweries? And you have to, like, you know, make sure that you're not promoting the wrong thing, even if you're just like trying it for once. But that's a whole other topic. But, you know, we try to be, you know, sensible consumers. So.
But yeah, it's definitely where's the good beer? And I definitely want to circle back to that because I want to ask, you know, what are some of your favorite places you've traveled for beer? But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about Bjor and your role in Bjor. And if you could explain to listeners who might not be familiar what that is and sort of your role there.
Yeah. So I was writing my blog, The Beer Nut, for 2-3 years and not really engaging with anything else that was happening on the internet. I think I had some sort of daft fear that if I read other people's opinions that it would affect my own or something. And it was only sort of 2007 that I started discovering that there was a beer community on the internet, and there was one in Ireland. There was someone had set up a website called Irish Craft Brewer. And it was really sort of intelligence. It wasn't very easy to find independent Irish beer. It wasn't easy to find homebrew supplies. So people who were interested in those things had a forum or community to discuss those. So I was straight into that and joined in, and that led on to in-person meetings at the Bull and Castle. We would have beer tastings and homebrew meetings. Barry Masterson, who some of you may know, was one of the instigators of it. He went off to Germany, and I found myself being a moderator of the community. And we had been asked a couple of times over the years, are you like camera? Are you a campaign group? And we weren't, we were just an internet forum. And then eventually we came to the attention of the European Beer Consumers Union, which is the umbrella group for organizations like Camera, who are organizing and advocating for beer consumer issues, which we were doing, just not in any organized sort of way. Mm-hmm. And they encourage us to become a fully fledged campaign lobbying consumer group. So to mark the change, we changed the name to Bjor. So bjor.org is our site. The activities did shift when Irish beer became much more commonplace. I mean, our goal to begin with was to have a situation where when you walk in off the street to any random pub in Ireland, that there would be something from whatever the local independent brewery is. And we've almost achieved that. It's not difficult to find independent Irish beer. So we don't do so much of the cheerleading anymore. And there's lots of people doing that as well, and fair play to them. What I'm more interested in, so I was co-founder of Bjor. I was its treasurer for a while. I stepped back, and now I came back a couple of years ago as its current chairman. And what I'm interested in are issues of drinkers' rights and the law and government policy and all of that sort of hard stuff that nobody else is doing, that tends to be a battle between the highly organized and well-funded anti-alcohol lobby and then the drinks industry, who have their commercial interests. So I think it's important that the consumer has a voice in this. And that's what I tend to use Bure for what I think is the real value of Bure. So we respond to government consultations and European consultations on various things that are happening, and just try to often find ourselves having to counterbalance both what the anti-alcohol people and the commercial interests are doing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what Bure is. And we do fun stuff as well. We have our AGM and we do trips and things like that. And all for only a tenner.
Yeah, and I think more people need to know about these trips, because I know when we mm-hmm. were chatting last time we met in person, we were saying, well, we didn't even know these were happening. We would love to go on some of these. So we could also help you cheerlead. That's part yeah. of our job here. Yeah.
Absolutely. I Bure was one of the first organizations that I joined when I moved here, and I literally don't think I'd be where I am today without the support from Bure and the support for like the Ladies Craft Beer Society of Ireland, which of course, you know, sprung up the podcast out of. And I just, yeah, so I love Bure, I support Bure, and yeah, join if you're around Ireland. I really recommend it. Yeah, just for a tenner. So yeah, great deal. So what do you see sort of going forward for Bure? Do you have any kind of goals in the next year even? So, any little boxes no. you want to tick off?
I have no real big plans. I kind of consider myself to be a caretaker chairman. my predecessor, Ruben, was very well organized, and he set up the various discounts that we have, and we had a magazine for a while, and all of that stuff is very hard work, and mostly yeah. I can't be bothered. So we'll do a few trips. I'm always interested in podcasts like your own when brewers come on and say, oh, come down and visit the brewery or whatever. So I was like, oh yeah, we must put together a Bure trip, and we'll do bits and pieces like that. And then we have the awards every year. We have what I think is a fairly unusual awards system for Irish beer, in that breweries can't enter it. It's entirely drinker's choice. So we ask everyone to nominate their top three beers of the previous 12 months. And we tot up all the votes and select our beer of the year. And I think it's a nice way of doing it, rather than, you know, having, depending on brewers to fill in entry forms, or you know, having blind tastings and that sort of thing. It's very, very deliberately democratic in the way that it does its thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The logistics of some of those bigger sort of organizations can be really complicated, in terms of some breweries sending stuff, others don't. You don't know what it's, you know, where it's been in the meantime. So it can be very, it can feel very unfair in some of them. But I like especially that it is, you know, sort of consumer driven, because otherwise it can become very, as we all know, can become very kind of, I guess, trendy, which I'm doing with the biggest air quotes possible. And I know, especially our recent episode on kind of, you know, beer terminology, things like that, like so many of those trends can become very kind of self-replicating versus maybe what people are actually looking for as drinkers.
Yeah. And with all due respect to the most decorated Irish brewery, it's not difficult to pay the money and send lots and lots of beers into lots and lots of competitions.
Yeah, I think that. That's an interesting thing to bring up as well, like the financial hurdles that it can take to even just enter these competitions. So, you know, having a one you can't enter, you're automatically entered if someone's drank your, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is nice change. It's refreshing, I think, personally. So yeah, circling back to the beer writing, John, how does it feel to be the beer writer of the year?
wonderful. The big fish, small pond analogy springs to mind, but I really like that the Irish Food Writing Awards did put beer in as a category from the beginning, because it is a criminally overlooked sector. I mean, there is so much food writing and great food writing done in Ireland, and there are, you know, very talented writers and a great food scene, and beer really is an afterthought. It's I know the Irish Times had a dedicated beer columnist for a while, and then they got rid of that, and then it kind of became a box in the corner, and it's just the way it's normally done, and even then it's not there every week. So the idea that beer writing would be recognised as a thing in Ireland, I think, is great, and that's why the first year I was absolutely determined that I would enter. Just to show that there is beer writing out there, mm-hmm. and I would certainly encourage anyone who's writing about beer in Ireland to get involved with the awards, and just to represent for beer, because beer needs it in a way that food kind of doesn't.
Yeah, because we do still struggle here a bit in terms of you know you're even, I don't want to say just your high end restaurants, where I feel like the ones in sort of the US or Canada, or even to an extent in the UK, there will be a beer menu with the sort of high-end tasting menu or whatever, in the way that you would have wine or something else. But it's harder to find here. There are places that do it, but it's not a given as it is in some other places. So I think there's still a little bit of that sort of bias to overcome. And I think that kind of award can shed light, saying, no, there is really high quality here, and we need to, you know, make sure that people are saying, oh no, this is something to pair with a high-end food. And not that it has to be that, because I love that it is democratic, but we want it to be in all spheres, not just kind of, you know, just after work at the pub, which is great, but you know, it's for everyone at any time.
Well, the offer certainly needs to be fixed, that there's this blind spot for our fantastic independent beer scene in Ireland, that just doesn't seem to get recognized by the when the celebrity chefs do decide to have a beer offer, that it just seems to be the industrial stuff. There was a celebrity chef has just opened a new bar and restaurant in Dublin, and I was on their website during the week because it was social media was covering it, and it had they didn't have their menus up here. They didn't have the drinks menus up yet, but they did have their philosophy. So talking about the winemakers that they use, or the small artisan, innovative, interesting producers, and then the cocktails would be local seasonal ingredients and simple and classy, and beer, it just said pints.
Pints.
So it really is just the poor relation for no good reason. I would like to see that change.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Especially as you say, there's so many people making really interesting stuff. And I think so many people too, where they have a really great story tied with, you know, either the heritage of the farm or the locality, or, you know, so many people using local ingredients, because it's, again, I wouldn't say it's a given, but I feel like we have a real kind of strength there. A lot of people are doing it locally, and, you know, why not celebrate that? You know, so much scope for it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially people seem to be really into like everything that's hyper local. And why would you have a hyper local meal with like all this amazing local produce or meat or whatever, and then have some massive macro beer? Like, wouldn't you prefer? I would prefer. I mean, I drink macros too. I'm not going to be judgmental, but I'm just saying, like, if I'm having a hyper local meal and I'm really trying to enjoy something that's really here that represents the place, I'd kind of want, you know, you want that local drink to go along with it. I would think that would be at least a nice option to have.
Yeah. Sometimes I would make the excuse that this is all quite new, because it is kind of new. I mean, I've been doing this since 2005, when there were only whatever 20 breweries in Ireland, and very little of the beer moved outside its local area. But it's been 10 years now since the boom. So it's not difficult to have your local brewery on your menu wherever your restaurant is or your pub is in Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love like some of the places where Hope has a tap, where they'll have a little sort of little chalkboard tap handle where it's like brewed 1 kilometer from here, 3 kilometers from here. And it's nice to see that kind of tie-in. I know others are doing similar as well. I just think of them because they're up the road. So
I was going to say the same thing when I was in Hoth last time. I walked into a pub and they just had like, you know, a couple of the Hoth or the Hope taps. And I thought that was really nice to kind of see like, oh, it's really local. So yeah, that kind of marketing, I think, is good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, Christine, you've got a bunch of questions too, but I think, John, what you were saying, Stuart, like it says, it's been 10 years. What do you think have been some of the really big changes from kind of when you started writing about it, kind of paying attention, if you like, to now, beyond maybe just kind of sheer numbers, which is exciting in itself. But
I remember when a new Irish beer coming out was a once a year phenomenon, and it would be a big thing for me to have the opportunity to write about a brand new Irish beer, and now it's probably more than one a day. It's pretty much impossible to keep up with. So yeah, I think it's the variety. It's when all the homebrewers got into commercial brewing and the idea of doing different styles became such a big thing that it was, because you had independent beer before, but it would be very much following the macro brands. You would have a lager, a stout, and a red ale, because that's what was on the bar everywhere else. So you know, when Galway Hooker came out with their pale ale in whenever that was, 2006, that was absolutely revolutionary, and then that was the beginning of everything else that followed. What fascinates me as a fan of lambic and goes, is the Irish wild fermentation movement, and people like Wide Street and Dot do some really interesting stuff on that. And I think it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Some of the Land and Labour beers have been absolutely world class, and definitely I've seen them holding their own at international festivals. As always, it's a very Irish thing to see an Irish person doing well abroad. Right. It's like, yeah, that's us. So I'm really interested in that end of things, the whole wild fermentation. I was asked to come up with an Irish themed beer seminar for the EBCU, and sort of haven't done much other than throw a few ideas around, but it got me thinking, well, what is it that Irish beer does? Because it's not going to be red ale. And I was thinking barrel aging. We have some very interesting things happening with barrel aging and the use of different barrels, the likes of Dot again and Otterbank, and how the different types of barrels can affect the finished beer, and it ties in with our whiskey industry, of course, as well. And I know barrel aging exists elsewhere, but it just seems to be a bigger part of the beer industry here, which I think is kind of interesting. So I'd kind of like at some point just to get a few of those people onto a call just to talk about how that works.
Yeah, I do feel like here it's a bit more kind of holistic. I kind of, like you say, because of the whiskey industry, I feel like in a lot of other places it can be very disconnected. It's like, oh, we bought some barrels from X or Y, but there's no kind of broader relationship, but they're not kind of part of the same ecosystem, if you like. So, but here they are, and that is a really interesting thing. And some of them even, you know, may have had, you know, the same barley that, you know, and then went into the whiskey, and then it comes back, and then we put the, you know, beer in it. And that's an interesting narrative, I think, just how the circle of life. So,
and just to go back, just to say, we talked about in our Bach episode, we would sponsor a lager barrel aging program.
So we have thoughts.
A long lagering program. We would, beer ladies would buy a sponsor keg. So barrel.
Dot seems to be making little else these days. They have a succession of about 5 barrel aged pilsners.
Oh, I have to keep an eye. And I wonder too, just thinking about styles, and again, I don't know if this is a sort of, you know, Bader Meinhof thing, because I just feel like a lot of these have come out in the past week or so, but I feel like suddenly there's a lot of stouts out. I don't know if it's 'tis the season or if this is something new, because I know for a long time, a lot of the local, you know, smaller people are like, well, there's not much point in us making a stout because there's a big player in that space. And a lot of people still are making some on a small scale or are making it for export. I know that a lot of the smaller breweries, whether it's Hope Bar, I know Ballyclavin, I've spoken to folks that their stout is hugely popular in Italy, France. You know, people are all, ooh, le stout. They want to see that. That's an Irish beer for them, but they want something that's not Guinness. Which again, we're not bashing Guinness. We like Guinness too. It's just a different thing. But I'm curious if, is this just my impression, or are more people starting to make stouts now for the local market? I don't know. And again, it may be seasonal. but
I would say it's seasonal. Yeah, and I was writing a series of posts a couple of weeks ago, and at the end of each one of them was like, "Oh, more pale beer. Let's have some dark ones, please." I realized I'd written that at the end of every single one. I think we're just getting into that season. So
yeah,
that is a good thing. Wicklow Wolf has some very interesting starts on the go, and I mean they're superb. I had the Winter Locavore, which is a 5.6%, easy drinking, session ish stout, but made with Irish hops. And you always think, well, oh, you're using Irish hops, bless. you've tried your hardest, but my God, it is deliciously hoppy. It's a lovely sort of green, fresh hop character to it.
Really nice. And I like a hoppy stout or a porter because you don't often see it, or at least often see it done well. So that I think is a testament to, you know, maybe the maturing of the industry as well.
Yeah, because that's right up my street. I don't like, well, the odd time, but I don't tend to gravitate towards like the sweeter stouts. I like a nice dry or more hoppy stout. So that sounds right up my street. If people aren't familiar, growing hops in Ireland is difficult.
It's a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, it's doable. But I think the first brewer in recent times to do it, I think stuck at it for about 2 years before deciding, no, can't be done on any kind of scale, too hard. I think Wicklow Wolf's advantage is that they have a horticulturist among the owners, so that's kind of his thing first and foremost.
Yeah, I do feel like with a lot of our local breweries, we tend to be lucky where a lot of them have sort of at least a token sort of mad scientist, if you like, amongst the bunch, where they all have a slightly different, you know, sort of speciality, but it helps to have that. And I think it adds some character and again, expertise to things.
Yeah.
Which I think was just kind of circles back to just how kind of amazing our craft beer industry is here in terms of like, from when I moved here and then John, like yourself, just how different things are. I just want to talk a little bit more about sort of the changes that you've seen in the last, however many years and innovations, I should say, you know, that kind of stuff. What has really caught you? What do you think is really like, wow, this is kind of, you know, this is nice to see, this is cool to see, that kind of stuff.
I mean, I think the mainstreaming of beer, that fact that you will see those hope taps in Dublin, you will. It was originally, I think it was when Carlo Brewing first brought out their pale ale. The badge is a very, very vibrant, bright green. So you could see it through the pub window from the outside, anywhere it was on. And just that idea that of just being able to go into a pub without having to put too much thought into it. And there might be a little fawn, there might be ambush, there might be hop on, you know, there'll be something from a local independent brewery, which means that you can stay there to the point where on Saturday evening last, one of my local pubs reopened, having been closed for the whole pandemic period and had various commercial related woes. But it was, somebody told me it would reopen. So I thought, oh yeah, we'll head there for a pint. And they used to have a good three or four breweries represented across six or seven taps. It wasn't by no means a speciality craft beer bar, but, you know, a place you could go and enjoy a few different beers from independent breweries. And I went in and was shocked that they had just Diageo, Heineken, and
so
a couple of Token Other Macros. And it's just, you know, how hard would it have been just to phone up one of your local breweries and get something in? So hopefully that's just a temporary measure because they had only just reopened. But I was just surprised that there are still pubs like this which have no independent option. I was doing the tippy toe thing where you're looking, peering into the fridge. That used to be how you got independent Irish craft beer. There would be a bottle of O'Hara sitting at the back of a fridge somewhere, and you'd have to do the tippy toes to and point them out there. And if you asked for it, the barman would tell you, no, we don't have that.
Oh, yeah, and it so still happens if you're trying to go to like maybe the theater or a concert. Sometimes that's the only place that's there, and sometimes it's not even there. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that whole the way in which the craft beer enthusiast is catered, not even the craft beer enthusiast, but someone who's interested in drinking something a bit different, yeah, is actually being catered for more in the mainstream. And it's surprising when you look at the numbers. I mean, independent Irish beer is something like 3% of the market. It went from being immeasurably small, you know, a decade or so ago, to being measurable. But then it seems that it sort of was 1.5%, 2%, 3%, and then just seems to have stuck there. I don't know why that is, but it just doesn't seem to be in any of the industry reports that I've seen, doesn't seem to be growing in the way that you thought. I figured, you know, it'd be only a matter of time before we hit the 12% that you have in the US or Denmark, but
especially with more canning, and you know, people just like during the pandemic, people coming across things that maybe they wouldn't have seen otherwise if they're local. So maybe that will still come.
It's amazing how things just snap back to normality. It wasn't this huge change. It was fascinating what happened during the pandemic as regards people's drinking habits. I had not really realized how much of a magic spell draft Guinness casts that people were spending hundreds on home draft systems rather than buying €2 cans of what is exactly the same beer. It's very strange. And the idea that Guinness is something that has to be served on draft, preferably in a pub, otherwise you drink something else, it's really just really weird. I don't know where that comes from or how that happened.
Very good marketing.
It's a ritual.
Yes.
John. Ritual.
Yeah. Ritual purpose. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Although along those lines too, I feel like too, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the smaller brewers are getting a real reputation, are getting proper sort of certifications for sustainability and things like that. So I wonder if that will also maybe drive some consumer interest as well. I just think there's a good, you know, five or six who are really good and getting noticed for that. And hopefully that will maybe drive more, again, not just more consumer traffic their way, but just kind of industry trends as well. Like maybe the big guys will follow them in some ways.
Yeah.
But I think sure now we also have playing against us the economic crisis, the energy crisis and all these things. You know, people don't have the disposable income perhaps that they used to. So maybe like in theory, the market is in fact larger. It's just that there are people who can't make those decisions because they're, you know, they're choosing to heat their home or they're choosing to, you know, pay for grocery, not choosing to, that, you know, they have to.
Right.
So, you know, I'd be interested to see if those things are resolved and when they're resolved, how that looks and how, you know, what the long-term things are, because I feel like, you know, we're still very much in a cost of living crisis. And I think, you know, it might not actually represent accurately the people who are interested in purchasing things that they just don't have the purchasing power right now. And hopefully, you know, we'll get this solved at some point and people will be able to buy houses and not have to, you know, and be able to, you know, feed their families and take care of themselves and not have to make these choices. But, you know, we are forced to make these choices now.
What's strange about that, though, is that, and I definitely have come across this perception that craft beer is more expensive than the mainstream brands. And the mainstream brands are, you know, premium for a reason. That just means they're advertised on television. they're not good value beers. And when you consider what you can get from the likes of Rye River in Lidl, it's there's really, really good value to be had in independent Irish beers.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially with the recent sort of kerfuffle over Heineken now charging publicans much more for, you know, per keg, and that the number of craft brewers come out saying, well, ours are the same price. We haven't raised our prices. Like, hi, here we are. So, yeah.
I'm sure
The Lidl and Aldi ranges are great for that.
Yeah.
That's where I buy most of my beer, to be honest with you. And it's great. Like, it's, you know what you're going to get. It's consistent. It's good. And the Solus range, I think that's Rye River and Tesco, is their Belgian white is chef's kiss. Very good.
Yeah. And I'll say that's the Lochgill ones that they do for, I guess, is it Little or Aldi? I forget which, Aldi. But Aldi. They have a bitter. It's the only place I can find a bitter. So, and it's gorgeous. It's a lovely beer and it's very affordable.
Put my tuppence worth in for Tesco's Manislav, which is a Pilsner made at Dundalk Bay. I think it's a ripoff of Budvar, but it's absolutely superb. It's very, very accurately done. And before minimum pricing came in, it was, I think, 120 a bottle. So it's now the ridiculous sum of €2 a bottle, but still good value at that.
But, oh, yeah. And they're all really, like, the bitter that Lochgill makes for Aldi. I mean, I used that to make my Skoltine, and it was excellent.
Yeah, it's lovely beer
as well. So I think you know, you have to know that, you have to kind of, you know, so I think maybe that's on us to get the word out a bit more. those grocery store beers are very good.
They are, and I feel like we don't have, and maybe John, this would be interesting to get your opinion. I feel like we don't have a kind of bias or sort of antagonism against, you know, people getting their beers into a supermarket the way they have in the UK, where there's this almost reflexive, like, oh, they're selling out now, it's not good anymore, or, you know, or oh, they've sold out to the man or whatever. And I feel like here it's like, oh, well done, now you're more accessible. And there, again, this is broadly generalizing, but I feel like there's a bias when beers are available in the supermarket.
Yeah, I'm sure that exact same thing exists here. Maybe it's not quite as loud, but I definitely can see that there is no substitute when it comes to getting beer into people's hands. That's how you do it. One of my other time sinks is I'm the editor for Untappd in Ireland. So whenever a new beer arrives, I get notification of it and I can see what's happening. And you definitely see it with the supermarket beers. There are just far, far more people drinking them, checking them in. So I would say for the breweries, it's well worth doing. I did have one brewery tell me that they got a better margin from Aldi than they did in the independent trade or one of the beers that they did. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Well, it's just convenient. Like when I'm going shopping, you know, I'll just, why don't I just pick up a beer or two? Whereas, you know, I love going to my independents. I go to my independents, but I have to think about it. It's a plan.
I think there's a place for them all in the ecosystem. I think the problem in the UK is that you do have probably more independent stores that would consider the likes of, you know, Cloudwater to be their breweries, and then they get annoyed when that goes into the supermarkets. But it's an ecosystem. Something else will come and take its place, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to say. I think that all of them are important and they all kind of play in together and they work well together, because I love my independent shops. As I said, pick this up at Martin's, and I love going to Martin's. Martin's is like me and a kid in candy store. So, you know,
I love haven't that. Been over in a while. It's a bit of a building site over there at the moment, I think, is it?
It's better. It's cleaned up a bit. Okay.
It's pretty bad. I can't wait for Christmas and all the Christmas beers and I'm so excited. I can't wait.
No, we're already halfway through November, so you won't have to wait long.
Yes. Oh, I know. And next week, Thanksgiving, which starts Christmas season for me in my head, so.
I mean, it already started after Halloween. I mean, at least for the kids, it's like immediate.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I think it was literally 1st of November was when the Christmas TV ads started.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like all the Christmas lights are up everywhere. I mean, I was in London this past weekend, Christmas lights everywhere. You know, we're not waiting anymore. It's like immediate. I do feel like it used to be mid-November, like maybe like around, you know, sort of around maybe the 15th, 16th. But now it's like day after Halloween, it's on. And I confess, I have not chosen my Advent box yet of beer. And you know, I like to be surprised. So I've got to get on that.
Oh, Lisa, do you have any further questions? We can start wrapping up.
I would say my only question at this point is what do you think is sort of coming next over the horizon? What are we going to see in sort of 2023? What's going to be the hot new local thing?
I make a point of not
predictions. No predictions.
I used to love Jeff Allworth's blog. He always used to do his lineup predictions, and they were always way out.
Or the
other thing that I really hate, and what I end up doing, it's what I would end up doing if you press me on this, is just saying things that are already happening. Right. Say more of that.
But it's okay. No one else has noticed. Yeah.
What I am concerned about is I don't think we've seen even the beginning of what's going to happen with regard to energy prices and all of that. There will definitely be casualties there. I really hope it's not too severe. But I would say that will be a worry when it comes to, you know, the end of the Christmas period and the lean weeks of January. I think there may be a couple of breweries that have very quietly either folded or just, gone into suspension after the pandemic. I haven't seen hide nor hair of them since. So I wonder, could we have a few more of those when we get into the winter? But hopefully not. That's not a very cheery note to end on.
No, and we have good news, like the Underdog is back open here in Dublin. So we finally have a place to go for all of us craft beer nerds. It's we've been missing that. So
absolutely.
I feel like we all run into each other there yet? I think at least several of us have. So it just happens.
Yeah. No, it's great. I was in on Thursday of last week, and that used to be my Thursday thing. They always used to put the new beers on Thursday, and I would go after work, and it just felt good to be back at the bar on a Thursday evening.
Definitely. And Cask is coming, so much to look forward to there.
I can't wait. I have not made it down yet, so once I'm released back into the wild and I can drink beer again, it will be one of my first stops. So
Pumpkin can't Beer wait. Festival at yours, and then over to the Underdog.
Yes, that sounds exactly like what my Christmas plans are going to be.
Brilliant.
So, John, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today and sharing with us your history and your background and your amazing work at Bior and Untapped and everything that you do. So thank you so much for coming on. And again, congratulations on your award. We're thank so you. Happy you. For you. thank you to Lisa for joining me today. And so for our listeners, just remember you can check us out on all of our socials. And if you liked what you heard, buy us a beer for Christmas.
Or buy some merch, y'all. Would look lovely. Would look lovely.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great Christmas present. So thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.